Hear the word of the Lord from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9, 28 through 45. Now, about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. And they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. On the next day, when they had come down from the mountain, a great crowd met him. Just then, a man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child." Suddenly, a spirit seizes him, and all at once he shrieks. It throws him into convulsions until he foams at the mouth. It mauls him and will scarcely leave him. I begged your disciples to cast it out, but they could not. Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you and bear with you? Bring your son here." While he was coming, the demon dashed him to the ground in convulsions. But Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And all were astounded at the greatness of God. While everyone was amazed at all that he was doing, he said to his disciples, "Let these words sink into your ears. The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into human hands." But they did not understand this saying. Its meaning was concealed from them, so they could not perceive it, and they were afraid to ask him about this saying.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Fred, for that beautiful rendering of Rhymes and Reasons. It's to everyone, it's my pleasure to talk with you this morning about spirituality and nature, to some degree about religion and nature. I'll offer some perspectives. I want this to be clear. This is not intended to be a comprehensive rendering of the importance of care for the earth within today's religious and spiritual traditions. But I do hope, in a small way, to reinforce the commitment and practice within this congregation to actively incorporate respect and love for the living world within our worship. I will draw from actually three primary resources. I'm going to be quoting from these pretty significantly and then add my own reflections. But the first of the three I'll draw from is Pope Francis's encyclical of May 2015. The second of those is the scholar Llewellyn Vaughan Lee's articulation of spiritual ecology, and in particular some of his comments about the Pope's encyclical. And thirdly, Dr. Gregory Cahete's voice as an indigenous Pueblo elder from the Southwest United States. Pope Francis issued his encyclical called Laudato Si on Care for Our Common Home in May of 2015. In my view, it's an eloquent, scholarly, thoughtful, and healing call for action. The Pope actually begins early in the encyclical, which is a substantial document, by the way, a lengthy document, but right at the beginning, he hearkens to the saint who inspired him and whose name he chose. Pope Francis says, "I don't want to write this encyclical without turning to that attractive and compelling figure whose name I took as my guide and inspiration when I was elected Bishop of Rome. I believe that St. Francis is the example par excellence of care for the vulnerable and of an integral ecology lived out joyfully and authentically." This is the Pope still speaking. He says, "Francis is the patron saint of all who study and work in the area of ecology. And he's also much loved by non-Christians. He was particularly concerned for God's creation and for the poor and the outcast. He loved and was deeply loved for his joy, his generous self-giving, his open-heartedness. He was a mystic and a pilgrim who lived in simplicity and in wonderful harmony with God, with others, with nature, and with himself. He shows us just how inseparable the bond is between concern for nature, justice for the poor, commitment to society, and interior peace." The Pope continues, "Francis helps us to see that an integral ecology calls for openness. Whenever he, Francis, would gaze at the sun, the moon, or the smallest of animals, he burst into song. Even presenting or even preaching to the flowers, inviting them to praise the Lord, just as if they were endowed with reason. His response to the world around him was so much more than intellectual appreciation or economic calculus. That's why he felt called to care for all that exists. He would call all creatures, no matter how small, by the name of brother or sister. Such a conviction," again, this is Pope Francis speaking, "such a conviction can't be written off as naive romanticism, for it affects the choices which determine our behavior. If we approach nature and the environment without this openness to awe and wonder, if we no longer speak the language of fraternity and beauty in our relationship with the world, our attitude will be that of masters, consumers, ruthless exploiters. By contrast, if we feel intimately united with all that exists, then sobriety and care will well up spontaneously." The poverty and austerity of St. Francis were no mere veneer of asceticism, but something much more radical, a refusal to turn reality into an object simply to be used and controlled. Pope Francis, in this encyclical, talks in detail about the challenges we face and what's needed to address them. He says, "The suffering of the earth is as real as the suffering of the poor, on whom the burden of this crisis falls most heavily. We must," the Pope tells us, "hear both the cry of the earth and the cry of the poor." He goes on to say, the Pope does, "The earth itself, burdened and laid waste, is among the most abandoned and maltreated of our poor." He says, "Today, however, we have to realize that a true ecological approach always becomes a social approach. It must integrate questions of justice in debates on the environment so as to hear both the cry of the earth and the cry of the poor." In hearing President-elect Joseph Biden's inaugural address recently, I heard him say, "A cry for survival comes from the planet itself, a cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear." Mr. Biden also said, "There are some days when we need a hand. There are other days when we're called on to lend a hand. That's how we must be with one another." Moving now to Llewellyn Vaughan Lee, in his book, Spiritual Ecology, The Cry of the Earth, he writes that Pope Francis's encyclical points us to the deeper moral and spiritual ground in which the crisis is rooted, the ground of the soul. "The well-being of the earth is not separate from the well-being of our souls the encyclical makes clear, to care for the earth is to care for the soul. Lee continues, this is the deeper perspective Pope Francis offers, and it suggests an even bigger shift in approach, a more radical reframing. Von Lee asks these questions I'd like us to consider. How can we reclaim the inherent mystery that belongs to all of creation while living in a throwaway culture that has covered this wonder with waste? How can we return to a magical world we've made toxic with our greed and desires and our addiction to consumerism? How can we reclaim our sense of relatedness with the earth and our vital work of care for our common home? Von Lee then observes the signs of wonder are all around us, from the simple mystery of a sunrise to the laugh of a child. So too are the signs of desolation we've created. And amidst both the beauty and the desolation is the cry of the earth, the suffering of this most generous being who gives us life and sustains us. If we can hear her cry, despite the clamor of distractions that bombard us, we can begin the work of returning to what is sacred and whole, to that connection that unites us all. Echoing the teaching of St. Francis, the Pope writes, and this is Von Lee quoting the Pope, everything is related, and we human beings are united as brothers and sisters on a wonderful pilgrimage, woven together by the love God has for each of his creatures, and which also unites us in fond affection with brother sun, sister moon, brother river, and mother earth. Putting all of this in his own words, Von Lee then says, love is the most powerful force in creation. And it's our love to the earth that will heal what we have desecrated, that will guide us through this wasteland and help us to bring light back into our darkening world. Love links us all together in the most mysterious ways, and love can guide our hearts and hands. And the central role of love is oneness. Love speaks the language of oneness, of unity, rather than separation. And if we truly hear the cry of the earth, feel her suffering and pain, our hearts will open. Her suffering does not belong to another, but to the very core of our own being, where we're one with the earth. This cry touches deeply within us, the soul of the world meeting our own soul, restoring the sacred ground of being, the inner being, we have with the earth and all of life. Von Lee also writes, the world is not a problem to be solved. It's a living being to which we belong. The world is part of our own self, and we are a part of its suffering wholeness. Until we go to the root of our image of separateness, there can be no healing. Lee goes on to say, we've begun a cycle that has left us with a world destitute of the sacred, in a way unthinkable to any indigenous people. The natural world and the people who carry its wisdom know that the created world and all of its many inhabitants are sacred and belong together. Our separation from the natural world may have given us the fruits of technology and science, but it's left us, at least in part, bereft of any instinctual connection to the spiritual dimension of life, the connection between our soul and the soul of the world, the knowing that we're part of one living spiritual being. It's this wholeness that is calling to us now, that needs our response. It needs us to return to our own root and rootedness, our relationship to the sacred within creation, and only from the place of sacred wholeness and reverence can we begin the work of healing, of bringing the world back into balance. Now, this is me in my own words. I'd add only, I believe, only from the place of wholeness in our relationships to ourselves and our own health and well-being, in our relationships with others, that is our friends and family and others in the human family, our relationship with all cultures, all of humanity's health and well-being, and then certainly in our relationships with all of life, all species, all ecology, all living systems. Only from this place of wholeness, beginning with ourselves in our daily lives and extending to our relationships with all of life on Earth, can we nourish and care for ourselves and others in a way that peace and beauty, care and kindness, reverence and respect will be our present and our future. In 2020, I served as co-editor of a special issue of a journal called the Journal of Eco-Psychology. The topic of that special issue was wisdom traditions, which includes indigenous perspectives, wisdom traditions, science, and care for the earth. Our own David Mulholland has a chapter in that, by the way. Either David or I can share that with you. My co-editor was Dr. Gregory Tejete, longtime director of Native American Studies at the University of New Mexico, an educator, scholar, and indigenous Tewa, a Pueblo elder. In our introduction to that special issue, Dr. Tejete writes, "In the face of the deep ecological crisis that's begun to unfold as a result of global climate change, people throughout the world are exploring cosmologies, paradigms, and philosophies in search of models which may sustain nature rather than destroy it. Many of these thinkers have found that indigenous ways of knowing offer some of the most profound insights for cultivating the kind of sustainable relationship to place and spiritually integrated perception of nature that's needed to address what's now become a global crisis of ecological relationship." Dr. Tejete would say that indigeneity or being indigenous means being of and within a place. It's not too late for all of us to create that sense of place, to learn about it and to love it in our own lives. Dr. Tejete continues by writing, "Indigenous peoples have consistently attempted to maintain a harmonious relationship with their lands. That sense of oneness or harmonizing involves the integration of mind, body, and spirit through a dynamic and complex set of activities. For indigenous people living in our harmonious and sustainable relationship with the land is a sacred responsibility. Indigenous peoples express a relationship to the natural world that Dr. Tejete refers to as ensoulment. The ensoulment of nature is one of the most ancient foundations of human psychology. For indigenous peoples, such ensoulment represents the deepest level of psychological involvement with their land. And in a sense, also reflects a kind of map of their soul. The psychology and spiritual quality of indigenous behavior, its reflections in symbolism, is thoroughly informed by the depth and power of their participation and their perception of Earth as a living whole soul, as a living soul and a living whole, I would add. It's from this orientation that indigenous people have historically believed that they have responsibilities to the land and all living things, similar to those which they have to each other. In the indigenous, mind, spirit, and matter are not separate. They're one and the same. Other traditions have a similar commitment to humanity's oneness with all it is. For example, in some of the Buddhist and Taoist traditions, that becomes the case as well. I've done a lot of writing. Oh, I want to quote very quickly as I look at the time, but this is something from Wendell Berry. "The care of the earth is our ancient and most worthy, and after all, our most pleasing responsibility. To cherish what remains of it and to foster its renewal is our only legitimate hope." I've done a lot of writing and speaking through the years about what I call the ecology of hope, and that really means putting all the parts together in a healthy whole that nurtures the health and well-being of all of life. And for me, it begins with children, with their health and well-being, for the safety and sanctity and peace of all that is. Hope requires action, vision, and care. It requires commitment and creativity, and it takes community. My friend and colleague Richard Louvre has recently begun talking and writing about what he calls imaginative hope. And that requires us to envision a future that we want to live in and that we want those who follow to live in. Imaginative hope, and then we need to translate that into action. So as I think about all of this and I look at our clock here today, I think I'll close, but give you three concepts that I have always found healing and nurturing from nature itself. One of those is niche, the concept of niche or niche. What that means is every single one of us has a contribution to make. We all matter. We're all important. We can all make a positive difference. Secondly, cooperation is the way the world works. You know, organisms in the soil, species in interrelationships. Cooperation is far more dominant in the living world than is competition. And thirdly, community, that we're all connected and that we live in a shared community of mind, body, spirit, and our lives rest within the abundant grace of our earth home. She needs to care for her as we care for ourselves, one another, our family, friends, and community. May it be so.
Thank you, Cheryl. Amen. And so we come to the end of a day of Transfiguration Sunday, right? That thing that brings us to the mountaintop, but then also back to the valley where there is healing and there is work to be done. I'm so grateful, Cheryl, for your calling us back to the practical applications of that, about how we love the next generation, how we love the earth. And for our benediction, I wanted to share with you all, and Charlotte, maybe you could pop out to everyone's faces just because I like to see faces. A benediction, a blessing for Transfiguration Sunday. It's called Dazzling, and it's a poem written by the poet and liturgical artist Jan Richardson. Dazzling. Believe me, I know how tempting it is to remain inside this blessing, to linger where everything is dazzling and clear. We could build walls around this blessing, put a roof over it. We could bring in a table, chairs, have the most amazing meals. We could make a home. We could stay. But this blessing is built for leaving. This blessing is made for coming down the mountain. This blessing wants to be in motion, to travel with you as you return to level ground. It will seem strange how quiet this blessing becomes when it returns to earth. It is not shy. It is not afraid. It simply knows how to bide its time, to watch and wait, to discern and pray until the moment comes when it will reveal everything it knows, when it will shine forth with all it has seen, when it will dazzle with the unforgettable light you have carried with you all this way. I invite you to stop by the mountainside and to see the dazzling light, and then to trek back into the valley where there is work to be done, where there is love to be shared. And I invite you to carry with you that unforgettable light that has been with you all this time. May you go forth into this world shining. And as you go, may God bless you and keep you. May God make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May God lift up the light of her countenance upon you and grant you peace this day and forevermore. Amen.